And then all of a sudden, I'm bleeding. Like, a lot.
Okay, so I just ask him, I'm like, am I gonna die? And he goes, I don't know. And they're just kind of looking at me and they're like, are you ready? And I'm like, no.
I just feel like I stiffen up and I'm like, ugh. Hi, Misfits. I'm your host, Melinda.
I'm Hannah.
And today, we are going to be doing another near-death experience story, and this is a personal one of Miss Hannah.
Yeah. So fun. We love it.
Yeah, so we'll let her take it away on this one.
Okay. I'll try to leave as much of the gory details out, but I will put a trigger warning. It's gonna get real.
You can detail it.
I'll detail it.
You can detail it.
Awesome. All right. This was in October of 2021. I was 26 at the time. Just to kind of put everything in perspective. So me and my best friend just came back from a fun weekend festival in Las Vegas. We went to the Evo Night Festival. And nothing was wrong. I, you know, had my drinks, mm-hmm. had a rip-roaring good time. It was awesome. Flew home that day. I was messaging a young man that I met on a dating app. And we were gonna meet up for some activities. And I promise this is relevant to the story. So I came home and I was talking to this guy and he was like about to go out of town for like a couple weeks. And so like that day was kind of the only day we could meet up if we wanted to meet up. So I was like, all right, just come over. So he comes to my house and some adult things happen. And then all of a sudden I'm bleeding like a lot and I didn't feel any pain. I just felt, he was like, whoa, you're bleeding like so much. And I was like, that's embarrassing. And then he was like, no, this is really bad. And I was like, okay, you could go. So I just like hand him a towel and I'm like, goodbye, get out of here. And so I like go into my roommate's room and I start pounding on the door and I'm like, you gotta take me to the hospital. Like, this is a lot of blood. And so he was like, okay. So we had just got off the plane, like maybe a couple hours ago. So he was like trying to get in a nap. Like, he was just like, oh, okay. So we put down like a puppy pee pad in the car. We get to the emergency room. I'm starting to feel a little lightheaded. And then we get to the emergency room and they're doing like an intake and they're like, okay, we're gonna make you wait. And I was like, I don't think I can. And they're like, what? And I like stand up and like literally all down my legs and into my shoes, it's like pooling blood. Just so, so much blood. So they were like, oh, okay, we'll take you into a room. And so like some time goes by and a lot of doctors come in. And they're looking at my bits. And what happened was I had an artery get punctured up inside of me. And they couldn't find where the source of the bleeding was because I was bleeding so much. By the time that they found the source of the bleeding, I had lost 3 liters of blood and you have 5 in your whole body.
Oh, God.
So I felt really bad. And they gave me fentanyl and ketamine. So I was like on a different planet. Like, have you ever seen Interstellar?
Yes.
So that scene where he's like in the bookshelf, like traveling through time, literally me. That was like, I was like floating through space and time because I was on so many drugs and lost so much blood. I was just like not conscious. And then all of a sudden my mom walks in the room and I'm like, that, oh. And so I just like immediately snap back into consciousness, talking to my mom and I'm like, hey, this sucks. And she's like, yeah, you good? And I'm like, I guess so. So they finally find the source of the bleeding. get me into emergency surgery. Or no, 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 sorry. I need a blood transfusion. Because they're like, girl, you're losing it real quickly. So once they find the source of the bleeding, plug me up, then I get a blood transfusion. And I just remember by the time they wheel me in, I was like sitting up in the chair. It's like a high chair when they do like your blood draws and stuff like that. So they put me up in the high chair and I like couldn't even sit up all the way. And I could kind of feel myself like starting to drift up a little bit. And then they start putting the blood in me and it's like, I just immediately was just like, oh, I can breathe again. My mom was said that my color came back. So I was like gray and then started just getting skin tones again. And she was like, oh, okay. So after all that, go into emergency surgery. They stitch me up. Things are good. So I stay in the hospital through the night. And then I go home the next morning. During the time of me being in the hospital to going home, I am so incredibly dizzy. It's like if you drink too much and have the spins. Mm-hmm. I was throwing up, couldn't keep my eyes open. It was hard for me to like stay conscious even just because it was like I was so dizzy. It was like I would open my eyes and the room would just be doing this. I'm like, I can't do this. So we're home now and I'm in bed and I just try to just sleep as much as I can because I said something to like the nurses and the doctors. I was like, I'm so dizzy. And they're like, oh, that's from the anesthesia. But like, I don't get motion sickness like at all. Like I could go on roller coasters like 5-6 times in a row and I could walk in a straight line. Like that has never like affected me. I don't really have like nausea issues. But I was like thrown up, couldn't see straight, couldn't walk straight. But they were like, it's just, you're coming down from the anesthesia. You'll be fine. And I'm like, okay. So I'm at home sleeping. Some of my friends come in and out to like check on me and visit me. And I like vaguely remember like a couple of people like saying, hey, but like, I just immediately close my eyes just because it's like anytime I'm open my eyes, I'll just be like just spinning. And I'm like, oh, I can't do this. So we finally get to a point where I wake up and I'm like, I don't even remember the last time I drank water. I'm going to try to drink some water. And then I go to drink some water and I can't get it down my throat. Like it'll just stop. And then I'm like, oh, I'm choking. So I have to just spit it out. And I'm like, oh man, like I'm just so sick. Like I didn't really know what to do with that. So then I go back to sleep and then I wake up and I have just absolutely awful stabbing pains in the back of my head. It's like someone's like just taking an ice pick and just going to town. It's like right in the middle in the back of my head. And so that's where I was like, hey, this doesn't feel good. This feels really bad. So I was like telling my roommate, I'm like, call 911. Call 911. I don't know what's going on. This hurts really bad. The EMTs come to my house. And they just tell me I'm having a migraine. They're like, oh, don't worry about it. You'll be fine. And I'm like, I've had a migraine before. Know what it feels like. I wouldn't even go to like urgent care if I was having a migraine. I just try to sleep. So that sucked. So then I just told my roommate to call my mom. My mom comes to get me into the emergency room and I can't even walk straight. I'm just so like off balance and like not really with it and like just kind of like ugh. And then we get to the emergency room, tell them what's going on. They give me a CAT scan and it turns out I had a stroke and it was like in the part of my brain in the back of my head. It's called your cerebellum. It's like right at your brainstem. And that affects like your balance and like just kind of like your functions as a person, walking and swallowing and all that.
So I know, like, I kind of have an idea of what a stroke is. I know that we've dealt with them in our family before.
Totally, yeah.
But what exactly happens in a stroke? Like, what is a stroke doing?
So it is a blood clot that gets in your brain and it blocks off the blood flow to certain parts of your brain.
Okay, so it's an actual blood clot
in there. It is a blood clot. And so
I just always kind of pictured it as like a whole bunch of nerves go haywire type of deal.
I mean, that's part of it. But the main thing is that your brain is not getting blood flow. And your brain, it's just kind of crazy because it's like your system's so sensitive that if you get like any sort of like lack of oxygen to your brain for any
amount of time, you get damage, like permanent lasting damage. So, yeah, so immediately once they determine that, I'm in the neuro ICU, I'm put on blood thinners, I'm on like heavy watch, and then I'm in there, and then finally, like, I'm starting to come back a little bit, and they're like, okay, let's get you to learn how to swallow again. I learn how to swallow again, and then they put me up into rehab, and I'm in rehab for like 5 days, and then I start having headaches really bad again. And to the point where I'm like, my physical therapist would come in to get me. And I'm like, no, I'm not doing it today. It hurts too much. I can't do it. So the whole time I was in there, I was like so adamant that I didn't want opiates, especially mm-hmm. because I'm having headaches. You're not going to take opiates for a headache. That is a one-way ticket to addiction. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, no way. Do not give me any opiates. So finally, I tell my nurse that's on, I was like, cool, let's get some morphine going. Cause it had been like over 24 hours that I've just had this really awful, like top of the head down through the neck headache. And I was like, yeah, let's get that morphine going. This hurts. And thankfully someone put a note in my chart that was like, no opiates. And so the fact that I was asking for opiates was like, hey, maybe we do like a CT scan. So I get another CT and it turns out I had another stroke again. And blood clot got just kind of shot up. So I'll backtrack a little bit. My stroke was caused from the, so you have arteries in the back of your neck that go up to your brain. Pretty big ones. They're called the vestibular arteries. And my left one just blew up. It's called a dissection. It just exploded. And we still don't necessarily know why. But the main like running theory that I think is the most like believable is me getting my blood transfusion. Cause it was like my arteries got so weak probably because they weren't pumping anything. And then they just kind of got it like a resurgence of blood. And then it just probably, it was just like, just like exploded. So, and then it was trying to heal itself. And then it just started kicking blood clots into my brain. So it was like, not like a traditional stroke, but like the act of having like blockages in my brain for lack of blood flow is like what a stroke is. So, mm-hmm. But the second stroke was because they took me off the blood thinners too early because they thought I was doing really good, and I was. But yeah, so that then like more of the blood clots from my artery trying to heal just kind of got kicked up back into my head. So then I get put into the ICU, and at this time, you know, October 2021, COVID is still like a pretty big deal. And like obviously in hospitals they're very safe with their protocols. So in order to be transferred into the ICU, I need to have a COVID test. Tested positive for COVID, even though I was only in the hospital for like 3 weeks. So I got it while I was in the hospital. And I just remember like being in the MRI machine, they pull me out and then like a nurse walking by is like, you're just positive for COVID, and then like gets out of there and I'm just like, one thing at a time, dude. Like, this is so much. So, my consciousness kind of gets a little like patchy from that moment to being in the MRI to getting moved into the COVID ICU. But I just remember coming back conscious. Like, I'm like, okay, I'm still alive. Where are we? And like in the COVID ICU and like, and the hospital that I was at, it was like the scene in E.T. where they're like completely shut, locked down their house, and it's like covered in like foil and they're all wearing like hazmat suits. Mm-hmm. Quite literally that. Like everyone was wearing like full hazmat, like oxygen tanks. Like everyone has like full protective gear, like trying to handle me. And I'm like, this is crazy. This is so much. And then I just remember, so I was only in there for a short while, but, I just could not be conscious. And I don't know, Ooh, I have to backtrack again because I'm missing parts of the story. But when I first go into the ICU and then they get the MRI just to see like what the heck is going on. So there is like, it's like a center. There's like these really, really sensitive blood vessels in like the middle of your brain. That basically if they get damaged in any way, like you are a vegetable. Like that's where you get the brain bleeds and then you lose like functionality in your brain. So if that is here, my blood clots were like right here. And they were preparing to do emergency surgery to put a shunt in my brain to prevent that from happening. But the neurologist, being a neurologist, was like, it might not work.
I'm like, yeah.
Okay. And I'm alone because it's COVID in the ICU and the neurologist is telling this to me while I'm like having this episode. And I'm like, okay. So I just ask him, I'm like, am I going to die? And he goes, I don't know. And I'm like, okay, great. So yeah, that's in the ICU. And then they move me into the COVID ICU. And then I keep going in and out of consciousness. And I don't know why still. Like, I don't know if it was like my brain was just like fighting for its life or like there was like parts of my brain getting blocked. So I wasn't getting proper flow. But yeah, so I lose consciousness for a long time. And then I have this like experience where I get transported to a different place. But I go to this like what looks like a pediatrician's waiting room in like the 90s. It's like really hard to explain, but it's like it has like the really weird wallpaper, like textured wallpaper. Mm-hmm. Like weird 90s designs on it and stuff. And like all the colors, there's color, but it's like really, really muted. It's like mostly grayscale with like a little bit of pinks and greens, but it's like really gross and muted. So I just remember just like sitting there and it's not very big. And then there's like a receptionist desk and then there is a door behind it. The door opens and like 5 or 6 people come out of there. And they're all super, like, color muted, like, mostly grayscale. And they all just kind of, like, line up behind and they're just kind of looking at me and they're like, are you ready? And I'm like, no. And then I wake up and I'm in the hospital. So it's like, I think they were just kind of like, do you want to go? And I'm like, no, I'm okay. I'm okay here. Thank you.
I think I'll stick around.
Yeah. A little longer. Yeah, and I just remember having a thought because I called my mom when I was in the ICU to tell her what was going on, which was like honestly probably one of the worst experiences I've ever had because it destroyed her because she couldn't even come to see me if she wanted to. She wasn't allowed to. And so I just told her, I was like, no negative thoughts are going to be happening to me. Like I am only thinking positive thoughts. And that is a mental exercise in itself when you're literally going through the throes of death. You're like, think positive, it's gonna be okay,
everything's fine.
It can't not be okay,
everything's fine.
Mm-hmm. So I was just kind of like pretending that, but then yeah, I was like literally presented with like, huh? And I was like, mm-mm, no thanks. So yeah, I like woke up, I was in the ICU for like another night. And they gave me a heparin drip, which is like an insane blood thinner, and it's like, I couldn't even get up. They didn't want me to get up because if I fell, I would have hemorrhaged and bled to death internally. So I was just, I had to be very, very still, yeah. Lie down the whole time. And so then I do another MRI and the blood clot completely disappeared. And, they were like, okay, go home. Because I wasn't presenting any symptoms for COVID. I didn't even have a fever, didn't have a cough, didn't have anything. And so I couldn't really be in the ICU taking up space for people that like actually needed treatment. And I also couldn't go back to the rest of the hospital because I had COVID. So they're like, all right, peace out. So, and now here we are.
So blood clots, that they just kind of dissipate on their own or pass through? And then where do they go once they pass through that certain spot? Where?
So, if you can catch them in time is the thing, because blood clots are real scary because it's like they just block blood flow and then kill you.
Right.
Because you can get blood clots in your lungs, you can get them in your heart, and then you can get them in your brain. So when you hear of like a pulmonary embolism, that's getting a blood clot in your lung, and that's real scary.
Yeah.
So what they did with me, so they can do like a surgery and put a shunt in, which is literally like a metal shield to like direct it somewhere. And I think after that point, like they're still going to put you on blood thinners no matter what. If your blood is like coagulating too much, they'll put you on a blood thinner. And the blood thinners usually like your body helps your body break down the blood clot. I don't really know why. There's probably some sort of chemical reaction, but it makes your body break it. Because a blood clot is just kind of like, you know, when you get a scab and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, it's kind of starting a little too early inside of you. So.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's really scary, especially like I have had to like really be like on my cholesterol because it's like if my arteries get like a little too cloggy in any way, like that is bad news bears. Because then it's like, cool, like it could happen again.
Right. Wow. Wow.
Sorry, not trying to freak anyone out. Watch your cholesterol. But
education's great, man. Education's great.
But like literally, like, so it's like an arterial dissection. It's very uncommon to happen. It's like basically what happened to me is like a one in like, not a, like a 7 million, not like a one in a million. It's like one, it's like very rare, especially at my age.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy.
My big age of 26 at the time.
She was older than she thought.
I know. Biologically, I'm like 98.
So, with that being said, which is so insane.
Yeah, that was, it's a lot. It was like one traumatic event to like an even more traumatic event.
Yeah, it was just this chain of unfortunate events.
Yeah.
Just horrible stuff.
Totally.
But so you had your experience in your pediatrician's office, we'll call it.
Essentially. Because it was like, I had never been to a place like that, but it felt familiar. That's why I was like, a pediatrician's office.
Oh, okay. So it had a familiarity to
it. Totally. Yeah. It was just like,
so how did you feel in there though? Were you comfortable? Were you blissful?
Yeah.
Were you
I was not upset? Blissful. That's the thing. It was just like, I was like a very mundane, like, I'm going to the doctor to get my shots. Like, that's just kind of what it felt. I was just like, I'm here, ready to go. Yeah. It wasn't anything out of the ordinary.
And I find this so interesting because, you know, we've been doing lots of research on near-death experiences. And because, you know, I did my video on this, my, you know, a recording on this already for my personal experiences. And now we've got one for her. So we're sitting there thinking, okay, let's look into this. Let's look into near-death experiences and what people are actually experiencing. And I just find it very, very interesting that what you experienced was all muted colors and it was a familiarity, but not like blissful, because all the things that we have really read or watched or whatever, like most people kind of have the same-ish thing, which is all these vibrant colors, like all the colors in the universe.
Oh yeah. I didn't even coming think about together. That. Yeah.
And just this feeling of peace and utter happiness.
Like welcoming. And, like, yes just, I'm home.
Yes. Yeah. Just like an utter love. Just love. And
yeah.
So it's very, it's interesting to me that yours was.
Mine was like such
muted.
A lame version of that. They're like
you get pastels.
Yes. And like not, it was like gross. It was just like gray, pink, and like, you know, that awful like seafoam green that are in like doctor's offices.
Yes.
Those were like, that was like the color palette. It was like not, it was very underwhelming.
Interesting. I just, that's crazy. And so I wonder if there's like, I mean, obviously people are different. Everybody's different. Everybody's brains are different. Everybody's experiences are different. Like some people are experiencing going through a tunnel. Some people are experiencing going through a field of flowers. Some people are experiencing just this divine light.
Totally.
Or whatever. You experience a pediatrician's office. I...
When you put it that way, so lame. Very cool.
I don't know. I just find it extremely interesting. But another thing that I was thinking of, because I kind of feel left out a little bit, right? Because I didn't have
an
experience. So in the research we were doing, mm-hmm. we did come to find out that if you are heavily medicated, it is less likely that you will have an experience or remember an experience. Mm-hmm. If you are less medicated, that's when people really start.
Yeah, because your brain is just going cuckoo bananas with all of the chemicals that it's releasing. Because it releases a chemical called DMT, which is like very psychoactive, probably to comfort you in your time of ending.
Yeah.
So.
And that's what creates the euphoric
totally.
Feeling.
Yeah.
Right?
It's just like a psychedelic, like a good psychedelic trip, because you can have bad ones. But yeah, no, it's definitely, when your brain is less chemically inhibited, it releases its own chemicals. And it's like, woo, we're having a party. Don't worry about it. It's okay.
I found that insanely interesting, and I'm like, okay, well, maybe I just don't remember mine or whatever, because I was so heavily, heavily, heavily medicated.
Oh yeah. You were just fighting for your life, honestly.
Yes. But so were you. It's just, you were not on like the mass amount.
Yeah. I was thinking about that too, because it's like,
but you were still on medication.
Part of me also feels like maybe I can't say that I had a near-death experience, because my heart didn't stop, but also your brain activity really is a factor in that. My brain activity really subdued. Oh, that's probably why I was in and out of consciousness, because my brain activity was like very limited, especially when it was really getting close to that vital part in
that,
your brain.
That flatline type.
Yeah. So I guess it's still a near-death experience. Mm-hmm. Like, not to like be like, gatekeeping near-death experiences.
No, and there's different near-death experiences. There's near-death experiences.
I was never, like, actually dead for, like, multiple minutes at a time like you. Like, you were, like, dead.
Well, yeah, but in the reading and whatever, and things that we were looking
materials.
Up, it does talk about near-death experiences where you didn't physically die, mm-hmm. but you were so close to death. That you still have the near-death experiences. Mm-hmm. And then you have the near-death experiences where you did die. Mm-hmm. So one and the same, but different.
Yeah, totally.
Type of deal.
Totally.
So.
But yeah, that's probably, I wasn't on like all the life-saving medication. Like they gave me like blood. I don't think they could give me a lot of medication.
Probably
because it
not.
Was probably like, we'll see if this works. And if not, you got to go through surgery. But yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, I don't know. That's what makes sense to me. And it's such a huge question mark. It's such a huge, huge question mark, because, like, I've never heard two of the same story when it comes to near-death experiences until we actually started diving in. And then these stories were all so insanely similar. Mm-hmm. But
it's all the elements of, like, not necessarily like you see light at the end of the tunnel, but a lot of people, what you were saying, talking about like vivid colors, lots of colors, feeling warm and like welcomed and
hugged and loved.
And almost like a lot of people don't want to go back once they feel that. They're like, no, I'm good here.
They're like, nope, you got to go back. And they're mm-hmm. like, no, I don't want to. I want to stay.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Which then segues into the next thing I want to talk about on this, because how do I want to present this? So I want to know if any of you have experienced any of these things as well.
Oh, but, totally.
I know that Hannah and I both share this same feeling, but, and I never really realized it until I started researching it. But, when you get to that point, when you get to a near-death experience, or you die and come back or whatever, then you almost are left with this little sense of emptiness, like a little hole of sorts, like something's missing. Oh, something's not quite right. There's just something missing. You don't know what's missing. You don't know what, you just feel like you're missing something, but you don't know what it is. You can't put your finger on it. And now I can recognize that after really looking into this stuff, I can recognize that. Whereas you asked me that a couple weeks ago, I wouldn't have told you that, because I feel that.
Well, I even asked you, I was like, do you feel this way? And you're like, I guess I do.
Yeah, it just, I never put two and two together.
Yeah.
And so now that just really makes a whole lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And, but not only that, but people, they come back changed. And they come back with a reevaluation of their life and more looking at it like,
because I can't imagine after seeing something like that or experiencing that, that you would just be like, all right, but same old.
Everything's the same.
Yeah, it's like,
no. Like a whole lot of them become more of like a daredevil and like not scared of death at all. Mm-mm. Now that they know that it's this beautiful, wonderful, amazing thing, they're just like, hey, I'm not scared. I'm not afraid of it.
Which makes me wonder, like, if you're like, just not even caring and you're like, bring it on, if it's going to be the same when it actually happens.
Right.
Come time.
Right.
Because your brain, like you as like a human being, like your body does so many crazy things to survive. Mm-hmm. So it's like, that could be just like a survival thing to be like, you're not dead yet. Like, come on, we're doing this. Like, we're really trying. So like, I wonder if you're like kind of careless and you're like, yeah, whatever. Like, whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, and then what it's really like when it is 100% time to say your bye-byes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that is very interesting, but also people's personalities change. And, I mean, the way they act, the way they view people, the way they view things.
Totally.
And, like, a lot of people end up cutting a bunch of people out of their lives because they're like, oh, that absolutely does not serve what my purpose is here.
Did that happen to you?
You know, I honestly, I can't tell you that because I've never, we'll say this. Once upon a time, I was a social butterfly. Mm-hmm. I was a total social butterfly. My mom and my sister are
party
like,
girl.
I don't even know what the hell happened to you. Like, you were a social butterfly and you love to talk to people. Although I always remember being like a little bit awkward, even in high school, I didn't have a clique of friends that I hung out with per se. Like, I knew people from different groups or whatever, but I wasn't Miss Popularity by any means. But I will say that I was a little more social. And then now I'm like, I'm not.
And you're so afraid of being awkward all the time. I think it's so cute.
And I am so awkward, which all of you guys can see it, I'm sure. Like, I'll be talking, and then all of a sudden I'm like, seven.
Whenever Mindy sends me footage, you're always like, I'm super awkward here. You need to cut this out. Oh my God, I'm so awkward. I'm like, are we watching the same video? Because I wouldn't say that at all.
Oh, I just feel like I stiffen up and I'm like, no. But whatever, that's fine. But so much of that changed afterwards because then it was like, nope, this is okay. And this is who I am. And this is who I'm going to be. And I didn't have to worry about what other people thought of me. I kind of quit caring a little more what other people thought of me at that point in time. I still did to a certain degree.
I mean, we all do.
It wasn't as massive as it was when I was younger.
So okay.
I guess that's like the bigger change that happened with me. When it comes to people, though, I never really had like big groups of friends. Even as an adult, I had just very select few close friends.
Yeah.
And that's all I needed. That's all I wanted. And so that's just kind of the way that's been. So I can't say that that has really changed, or that I cut anybody out of my life for that matter, because
honestly, after going through all of that and then also just like completely rerouting your life is like a whole other traumatic experience in itself.
Yeah. So. Well, sure. And so I was going to ask you, like, did that happen to you? Did any of that take place with you?
I'm gonna say yes. Excuse me. But it's just because I'm different now physically. Like, I still have brain damage because my cerebellum was affected. It's not on, like, what I was told verbatim from the neurologist is, like, if you're gonna have a brain injury, like, you have the best one to have, which is a weird thing to say to somebody, but
silver lining,
you know. So it's like none of my, like, cognitive, like, my personality for the most part stayed the same, and then, you know, it's just like learning how to be a person again. I had to learn how to walk again because my balance, like, even now my balance is still really effed up. I have good days, I have bad days, but it's just like, you know, like, I'm more, like, physically inhibited than I was, but it's not like it's like, oh, boohoo, my life is over. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, it's different now. And because of that, I don't want to go out, like, because I used to be a party girl. I used to go out a lot. I used to go to the club. I used to go to music festivals. I used to do all that stuff. And that's very physically taxing. Mm-hmm. I still have gone to a few of those, but it's very different now. So within that whole, like, not really being party girl so much anymore, I don't really see or associate with the people that kind of
were in the party crowd.
Occupy that scene. And it is what it is. Because for a while I felt really bad because, like, all when people would reach out to me, because that was the other thing too, is because, like, I have wonderful, close, supportive friends, and they created a GoFundMe for me. And so they were just blasting it. And then because of that, and also, like, I was posting videos in the hospital being like, just so everyone knows, this is where I am and I'll probably be here for a while. And a lot of people, like, people that I went to in high school, like, I literally hadn't talked to since high school, like, reached out to me and they're like, oh my God, are you okay? And I'm like, why do you care? Like, you know, like, it, only because something super bad is happening to me. Or, like, you know when someone dies and, like, they try to be like, oh my God, like, blah, 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 like, we're so close. Like, trying to get attention. Yeah, because of the dramatic experience. So I kind of felt a little bit of that. I was like, that's great. I forgot my point of this. And so because of all that, there were a lot of people that I felt like were just kind of, like, checking in on me just to be part of the, like, drama of, like, me being, like, really sick and, like, not doing well. But I definitely, like, because if people asked me what I needed, I would just be like, come visit me, because I, like, can't do anything, especially when I was home, because it was like I was still pretty immobile. Like, I could walk to the bathroom by myself and that was, like, pretty much it. So if, like, my roommates were at home, like, I couldn't really leave my room. So if people were like, oh, like, what do you need? How can I help you? I'd be like, come hang out with me, you know? Like, I'm pretty laid up, you know? And no one came to visit me. It was like my really close friends who, like, were there the entire time came to visit me, but not really anyone else. And for a while I took that very personally. I was like, oh my God. But also it was just like, I kind of got to a place of, like, whoever needed to be there for me showed up. And, you know, quality over quantity. There
yes.
we go.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's kind of, like, kind of comes and goes when it's like you feel like you have this, like, army of people that love you and care about you, which I'm not saying that they don't love or care about me. But it was just like in that moment where I was like, this is what I actually want. I just want you to come hang out with me. So I'm not just, like, by myself, just, like, laid up.
Yeah.
And, like, very few people did.
Oh.
Very few people did.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. So would you say mm-hmm. that when you kind of quit the party scene, did you quit the party scene people because you didn't feel like you wanted to be in that crowd anymore? Or just because
I felt
you,
like,
physically couldn't
yeah.
do the party scene, and so you just felt like, well, I can't reach out to these people because they're my party people?
Well, it was like, I definitely felt like I got left behind.
Ah. Okay.
Because it's like they have the ability, if they actually do care about me, to, like, reach out. Or a lot of those people, like, reached out just to, like, see if I was alive.
Well, that's good.
And then do the, like, oh, if you need anything, let me know. And I'm like, actually, come hang out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it was okay. Like very much like left on red, or like, they're like, yeah, totally. It's like, but also it's like kind of what happens when you like lose your mobility or like just kind of like become less abled is that it's like you do kind of get like lost in the crosshairs a little bit. Because like, honestly, like I don't think of nearly most of the things that I have to think about now, like going to a public place. I'm like, are there stairs? Am I going to be able to get to and from the bathroom by myself? What happens if I fall? Is there security around that I could ask if I need help and stuff like that? If there's a situation where I need to leave really quickly, where are the exits? Like, where do I need to stand in this vicinity? Like, you know, just stuff like that where it's like...
So you have created a fear.
Yeah.
You have created a
it's not necessarily fear. It's just more of like, these are just things that I kind of do need to have in the back of my mind.
Sure. I mean, yes, knowing where the exits are.
Yeah, but it's not like I can't just like walk into the club and just immediately start doing shots and just being like, yeah, woo, party, and just like not think about anything.
Right.
So it's just kind of like, because I have to think about those things, it kind of pulls me away from the experience. Mm-hmm. So I can't really experience that the same way that I did.
Can't be as free with it.
Totally. Yeah. And it's like... I don't think it's a bad thing. For a while, I was really sad about it just because it was a change. But I don't think it's a bad thing. But because of that, it's definitely put, like, a bridge between me and some of the folks that I used to, like, big party with and hang out with and get wild and crazy with.
Yeah.
So, I don't think that answers your question. I think I kind of tangented it a little bit. But what I will say is that it's, like, because of... the isolation that I experienced, it definitely put into perspective, like, who actually cares about me and, like, what is important to me. Because I value time spent with people more than anything in the entire world. I used to be super, like, afraid about, like, financial security, like, I was always, even up until that point, I was working two jobs. I didn't have a day off. I've always been working my ass off. And now I'm like, I don't even want to go back to work. I'm like, I want this to be my job. I do not care. Like it's stuff that, like, used to, like, kind of control my life does not control my life anymore. So I guess that's kind of the thing that when people are like, your priorities change like that. Mm-hmm. That was my priority that changed. It was just like, I only care about the people I love and I just want to spend more time with them. And that's kind of the main thing that I care about.
Wow. That's really cool. Mm-hmm. That's really cool. Yeah. I would definitely be interested to hear what experiences any of you have had. And if, you know, your circle of people has changed, if you have just like decided this is not for me.
Yeah.
This is the new me and this is not for me type of deal.
Well, and I think it's interesting too, because a lot of people experience that just by like getting older.
Sure.
Change, like moving. Yeah. You know? Yeah. So it's like probably on like a less crash course way, like crash landing into it. I feel like a lot of people will have to experience that at some point, which sucks. And change is not great all the time. Especially if you don't have control over it. Yeah. It's, like, not super fun. But so it's, like, to a degree, everyone will probably experience that at some point. But for us, I don't know if I can speak on your behalf on this, but it's, like, for me, since I was pretty young when this all happened, it was just, like, my life changed, like, immediately.
Yeah.
It was, like, ever since that night, I was, like, my life has been different now.
Sure. Yeah. I can see that. And I will have to say one thing that I did notice for sure that changed immediately with mine was, you know, a lot of people say that they become less fearful, like more free, more
totally,
well, less scared to die. Mm-hmm. Mine was the exact opposite.
Yeah.
I can say that I quit jumping off cliffs. I used to jump off cliffs. I don't jump off cliffs anymore. And I stopped that immediately.
Yeah.
I quit anything extreme that I used to do because I used to be a total adrenaline junkie.
Mm-hmm.
And
I kind of was too. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't do any of those things.
I like physically cannot do that anymore.
And I don't know if it's because I was so like, my children almost lost their mom. And that's the perspective that I was thinking. I'm like, oh my gosh, it just, you're faced with your mortality, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so at that point in time, you know that anything can happen at any moment. And so why am I going to put myself at risk and, you know, let my babies go without a parent? And so that was a drastic change. I can say that that was immediate for me.
Yeah. So, I don't have kids, so it's like I can't even relate to that on that level. But I know that's like a primal instinct almost.
Yeah.
It's like your babies come first, kind of no matter what. So
absolutely. So that is our discussion on near-death experiences today, unless you have anything else
Follow
to add.
Part two, other than the fact of, like, if you're kind of lost about what happened to Mindy, we did an episode a couple weeks ago. It's called Near Death. So watch that one if you don't know what happened to Mindy. So
yeah, I've had a few of them, but
yeah,
I'm here.
Yeah, we're kicking it. So far, so good, I guess.
So far, so good. We're winning. All right. Well, thanks for listening, Misfits. After all, mystery loves company. Bye.
Bye.